Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olifier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. Welcome back to Divine Intervention, and for the second week in a row, we'll be trying a red from the Cape, another elegant-looking label. Let's hope it's as elegant inside the bottle as it looks from the outside. With me in the Joburg studio to taste the wine, we welcome back for the second week somebody who writes about wine but also has a day job as one of South Africa's leading branding consultants, Jeremy Sanson. Jeremy, great to chat to you again.
John, as always, great to be here. Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming in, and let's just make sure that we get through this with the brand of Divine Intervention flying and soaring. I'll get some advice from you off air later. And also with me, again for the second week in a row, and we're delighted that he's given us the time to come and join us for this, is the group sommelier for Soko Sun, Miguel Chan. Miguel, great to see you again.
John, always great to be with you and be part of that. Very fantastic.
And thank you for helping us to help you in your ever onward quest to educate people about wine. You do it on Twitter, you do it on Facebook, and I'm sure you occasionally put in a shift behind a wine bottle and a corkscrew in one of the many, many hotels that...
it is indeed the role of a sommelier.
Yeah. Well, somebody who I remember well when he used to run Park's Restaurant down in the Cape and put together stunning and stunningly good valued wine lists is, of course, our food and wine guru, Michael Olifier. Michael, great to chat to you again.
Oh, John, thank you. Lovely to be with you.
Well, I've introduced the guests. What about the bottle? It is a Credo. We tried a Credo White on Divine Intervention a while back. This is a red. It's a Quatuor. It's a blend, according to the label, of Shiraz, Merlot, and Viognier. Michael, tell us about it.
Well, the Credo is a flagship of Stellenbosch vineyards, and the grapes for this wine come from Helderberg and Stellenbosch, you know, Helderberg being the great sort of red wine area of Stellenbosch. 64% Shiraz, 30% Merlot, 6% Viognier. And it's had 300-litre French oak barrels for 26 months, which is stretching it. 90% of the barrels were first fills at Newwood, and then 10% of the second fill, and then what they then selected and filtered and bottled. This wine, I really like this wine. I mean, it's got this sort of almost black ruby color, opaque. You can hardly see the bottom of the glass. The nice sort of ruby garnet around the edges, and it just comes in waves at you from the minute you get your nose into the glass. Lots of dark fruit, blood plums, blackberries, and there's some sort of fynbos-y herb going on there as well. And then, of course, that nice sort of floral spun sugar note that Viognier gives to a blend like this. It's really nice, complex wine, and just lasts forever on the palate.
Well, I'm quite enjoying it. I have to say, it doesn't really do a great deal for me, Michael. It's not a bad red wine, but maybe it's just too much oak. I don't know. Do you think that could be a drawback?
I think there's quite a lot of fruit there. I'd be interested to see what Miguel thinks of it.
Well, let's pass it over to an expert.
Well, this wine is a monster. This is a big wine. Certainly structured by the Shiraz, but it's powerful. The oak is showy, and as Michael said, there is more than enough fruit to support the oak component in it. But nevertheless, it's a wine that requires substantially rich flavored food to go with, or grill food for that matter, where the charry character will be almost highlighted by the different layers of aromas, fruits, and the smokiness of the oak. But it's certainly a powerful wine.
You mentioned food. What would you suggest, Miguel?
I would go towards more sausage, like a pork sausage, something that a tripe sausage, something that's off the beaten track, but quite fatty, but cook on a grill. That would be kind of perfect.
Jeremy, how are you enjoying this Credo Quattro?
John, yet again, is a wine that I've never heard of before. Now I'm tasting it, I actually am thoroughly enjoying it. I find it quite gentle, but it's a big, strong wine. As Michael was saying, you know, take a mouthful of this. You know, people talk about sipping. Well, you've got to take a mouthful from time to time and feel how it lingers in the mouth. It's a beautiful wine.
I'm topping up.
Yes, I heard you. But Michael, all these wines that we've never heard of, you know, I noticed that also the top restaurant lists that have just come out, I think 17 are from the Western Cape. You know, half of those I've never heard of. What is it that the Western Cape is doing that Johannesburg doesn't hear about even? And Credo is a good example of that.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, obviously we have the advantage of being close to the vineyards. One of the reasons we don't, as a nation, are not really wine drinkers is because we're not like France or Portugal, or where you're within a couple of hours' drive of a vineyard wherever you live. You know, I go out into the country once a week. I'd spend a day. I drive around. I go to different places, and I pick up these plums, which is lovely.
Michael, I hate you, but you knew that. that is one great advantage to living down in the Cape, isn't it? That you have so much and so much variety. And I know we've discussed this before, Michael, but I'm sure Miguel has his views on this as well. The way in which a visit to a wine estate is no longer just drive in there, taste, and drive out. There's so much else on offer on many of these estates, isn't there?
Absolutely. There's so many things happening in the winelands, and one of the best thing is, the best advice I would give is always draw up a plan. What one likes and where they want to see, and take it from there. And it's a diversity of and there's so much choices also out there.
Yeah. Of course, Jeremy, you make an annual pilgrimage, or is it now four times a year as you're heading to retirement?
I wish. Middle of September, in fact, we went down for a week earlier than usual, and we used Constantia as our base at Constantia Eidsig, and traveled around the area a little bit. We found that some of them hadn't woken up. Some of the estates hadn't woken up from winter, which was a little bit disappointing. The wines were superb, but sometimes the experience of going to a place was a bit disappointing. And then we went on, in fact, to the Helderberg. We stayed at Eckendal for a couple of days, and we explored and traveled around. I'm finding more and more, though, that these estates and winemakers are just procuring their grapes from all over the place. It seems to be almost who do you want to go to this year, or who's got the best pocket of this or that. So more and more, you see less and less of estate wines that are pure. I don't know if that's an issue that we need to discuss sometime.
Well, Michael, one thing that I really wanted to talk to Miguel about on his second visit to us is the way in which he, as a sommelier, can help to spread the word, and indeed why somebody would want an extra member of staff in a restaurant who isn't busy making sure you get your food. How important is it in a top restaurant to have somebody who not only knows what the food is like, yeah, but can also guide you to something good to drink with it?
Well, the role of a sommelier is not only about recommending a bottle of wine and opening and pouring the wine. The role of a sommelier is he or she, as an individual, needs to have a thorough understanding of food and beverages at the end of the day. And always, a restaurant or any operation, in any food and beverage operation, should see a sommelier as a person that will increase their revenue, full stop. And he or she will guide the customer into doing the right pairings. We don't impose, but what we try to is to guide them into choosing the right bottle according to their budget, according to their taste, and according to the season of the year and the menu that is being served during that particular night or lunch, for that matter. So trust the sommelier. There is an experience ahead.
And, of course, Michael Olafier, you've run several restaurants in your time. Obviously, there isn't always a budget for a sommelier. So what do you do then? How important is it to make certain that certainly the proprietor, but also the other waiting staff, know what the wines are like and can guide the customer, if as many customers aren't? They're not really conversant with everything that's on offer.
Yeah. Look, John, I think with me, I mean, myself was used to say, you know, what are you doing here? the kitchen does the food, we serve the food, you know, are you really necessary? I think one of the things was, you know, that you facilitate the whole thing. And if a waiter who is busy serving has a guest say, what kind of wine do you think I should drink with this? I would be called. Now, I know the wines. I've tasted them all. They're all on my wine list. And I can give the guest that advice. And it's just quite interesting how people love a story about wine. And you know, if you say, well, last week I was out there and I met with Jan and we tasted some of his new stuff out the barrel and I think it's just getting better and better. You know, that people love that sort of story. And they can relate to it and they say, great, we'll have a bottle of that.
So and the power of bullshit, it really does work.
It's huge, John.
I have to say, Michael, since we've been chatting, I've allowed this wine to swirl around in the glass a bit, and I'm improving my opinion of it. It is becoming more and more pleasant. Maybe I just didn't give it enough time to get accustomed to the glass. It's a very pleasant wine. And as always, as we mentioned in last week's discussion, this is something that I chilled a little bit. A red wine, a little bit chilled, I think that does make the difference. But I think Jeremy wanted to come in.
I just wanted to comment on the power of the sommelier, and talking about stories being bullshit, as my friend John has just said. Because being a brander, I understand that stories and stories about brands can be quite powerful. But I have to say as well that I was lucky enough in March to be in the UK, and I went down to Cornwall and I managed to get into Rick Stein's restaurant, and I offended our waiter by asking for the sommelier. He actually showed that he wasn't very happy that I said, is the sommelier on duty tonight? And he asked me, in fact, what I wanted, and I was with my wife and two daughters, and when I explained to him, out came this fountain of knowledge. And it was marvellous. Not only was he a fantastic waiter, in fact, the best waiter I've ever experienced, he looked after our every need, suggested wines. At one stage, he thought I was drinking something with something else, which I wasn't, and he suggested something else. He was marvellous. And I think this is what I miss in a lot of restaurants in South Africa, that you even ask the waiter, what is a particular dish like, and they haven't tasted it. And that's what really turns me off. So once you get to having a good sommelier, as Miguel will say, that really is the cherry on the top of a really enjoyable evening.
Okay, so yeah. So that begs the question, Miguel. You're the sommelier for a large hotel group in South Africa, spreading beyond this country, indeed beyond this continent. How important is it for you and your colleagues to make sure that upskilling, training, sending people off to wine farms when you can, bringing in wine experts to chat to your staff. How important is all that?
Highly critical, and it's all about training. It's all about engaging with the workforce, and it's about giving them the required tools to perform their duties on the floor. And it's constant training, constant informations about new wines. So any new wines that get listed, they have the details. Any new dishes or new menus, they are called in to taste the different dishes. So it's an ongoing training, and it's a huge task indeed. And when one look at the size of the operations, but this is the only way to do the job and to ensure that our guests, our customers are happy and get the necessary experience when they choose us as a destination.
Well, I'm very happy that we managed to get two very experienced and expert tasters into our Joburg studio to have a look at this Credo Quator, a blend of Shiraz, Merlot and Viognier, which seems to get better with every sip. But you could probably say that about me and most whites. So thanks to our two studio tasters, to Jeremy Sampson from Interbrand Sampson. Jeremy, great to have had you back with us.
Thanks, John.
And to Miguel Chan from Southern Sun. Now Sogo-san. Now Sogo-san. And last but certainly not least, many thanks to my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier. Michael, as always, a delight to chat to you.
Oh, John, such a pleasure. Lovely being with you again. Thank you.
And I mustn't forget this time to thank our engineer, or he'll do something nasty to one of the wires. Malcolm McDonald, as always, has been invaluable in helping us to put these podcasts together. From me, John Fraser, that was Divine Intervention. Join us again next week.